Dearly beloved, I'm that F King guy, the host and celebrant of the late podcast, If It's Not the End. The show which speaks to the previously alive, but now sadly no longer living guests as they make their way into the afterlife. Whatever that is. Today, someone I've never spoken to before this recording, a person I'm sure has never actually watched a podcast. Because, you know, he's got a podcast called The Never Watchers, and he's also slightly angry, apparently. Let's find out why. Same thing that you know you have to buy. Was that smell like fish? Good if really wants to know. I mean, good if really wants to know. So I know you mostly from Discord, and your screen name is Angry Kurt. Why the angry?
So everyone would probably say I'm quite a calm and collected person. But basically, I used to play football on the park with my mates. And yeah, my mates always saw me as like never getting angry at anything, pretty calm. However, I was playing football once and I wasn't playing very well. And I don't know, a flip just switched in my brain because I was so frustrated with my own performance that I like went like totally apeshit and started going crazy, shouting at the football, shouting at myself. And then from then on, it was kind of like a running joke to call me Angry Kurt because it was like a ironic thing because I actually don't ever get angry. So yeah, that was it really.
Ah, cool. So this is the first time we're chatting in real life. It seems to be weird to be asking you such personal questions, but here you go. Who is your daddy and what does he do?
My dad is called John. In terms of what he does for a living, he's like some kind of, I guess, researcher / scientist, but for carpets. So It's difficult to explain. So I think even he has difficulty explaining it to me. But basically, he'll come up with inventions for carpets, like carpet technology. So a good example would be like he would come up with the carpets that you get on planes or on like a cruise liner. So I remember once he said that he came up with this carpet that went on planes that basically glowed in the dark so that if he was in an emergency situation and the lights weren't working, then the passengers would still be able to see the route to the emergency exit points. And then it's stuff like waterproof carpets for like, spillages and stuff. So yeah,
it's an interesting job. I never actually thought about that. Cool. And yourself, what do you do?
So I am I'm called an analyst, and I work in the video games industry. Currently working for EA Codemasters, working on the Formula One video game. So basically my job involves looking at all the different player data that we get with how players are actually playing the game and presenting that to stakeholders, I guess. Easiest way of describing it.
Cool. And you host a podcast yourself, and obviously we've got to get ourselves out there. Where can we find you online when you are alive?
I'm not really online anywhere, but other than on the Discord servers that we're in. But I do a podcast called The Never Watchers, which originally started out as a podcast where I had never seen any of the Marvel films. And my co-host Pete, he'd seen them all and was a MCU expert. So each week or each episode, I would watch one of the films in release order. And then we basically just discuss my thoughts on it We have now caught up with the MCU, so we've kind of expanded it into other films that one of us has never seen before, whereas the other has.
Awesome. And I said, when you're alive, because obviously we're now all dead. How's it
Yeah.
feel being dead?
Well,
Relief?
I'm still conscious of my own thoughts, so that's something. Because I don't know if this is something we'll get into later, but I do think about death perhaps more than I should, in terms of what death entails, or what is your state once you're dead. And I think one of the theories I'd help heard that I don't particularly like, and is what causes me to think about dying so much, is the theory that if you think about to the time before you was born, you don't think you have no memory of that time. It's just nothingness. Like, my greatest fear is that death is also nothingness. Because I don't, this is going to sound like really positive, but I actually quite like being alive, and like I enjoy my life. And to think that I would go from this to just a state of nothingness, really scares me. And I know that people say that, like, well, as you when you get older, like when you're 80 years old, I've heard older people say, "Oh, I'm ready to go now." Maybe I'll get that way, but I hope I don't. But yeah, I just can't really imagine being in that state of mind. Like, I consider that I'm quite lucky to feel that way, but in terms of like enjoying life. But yeah, death is something that currently does like quite scare me.
Yeah, I mean, if you enjoy being alive, then it definitely would. I think I sit on that thing of when it happens, and that's why I've always been on through all these shows. Are pretty much like, yeah, if it's always been about death and like the big apocalyptic event kind of thing. Everyone just dies at once. I think that's my ideal one, because then it's like everyone's in the same boat. I'm not going to miss anything, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think I do get that. I can definitely see where you're coming from there.
That's an interesting way of looking at things. Did you have any religious upbringing at all? Did your parents or believe in stuff or push you towards certain things?
Well, I would say I'm still currently religious. Like, I'm not someone that goes to church every Sunday. But I do like read the Bible semi-regularly, just to remind myself of like certain teachings and stuff. And yeah, so it's like I do put it bluntly, I do believe in God. But yeah, I wouldn't say I'm like 100% religious to the point where I'm going to church all the time, and I wouldn't say I'm really someone that's like a preacher. I never really like force my views on other people.
That's amazing. It's like 12 episodes in, and we finally found someone who believes in God. So, do you have the traditional idea of heaven and hell at the end of everything then?
I guess so, yeah. I
And
don't
what
know
would
if I'd
be
say
the heaven you'd
traditional.
ideally want then? Is it like
Well,
friends and family, or do you have some sort of different idea?
when you say like traditional idea of heaven and hell, like I'm not sure if I necessarily think it's like you go up and see the golden pearly gates and then you're like sat in the clouds for the rest of your life, or death. I consider heaven to be you being back with your family and friends. However, I don't necessarily, because who you consider your family and friends, like I'm not saying this is a situation for me, but say that you had family that you didn't like, or but they liked you, and the same with your friends. Like, I think what you would, my idea of heaven is you being in a state of consciousness that you're around with those, the spirits of those people, whereas their respective spirit from when they died, they will be in their version of heaven, where you might be there or you might not be there. And you'll be around the things that you like and enjoy doing. Like, I might be in my idea of heaven with my family, and I go and watch, I get to go and still play video games and watch football and stuff from up high. But like, my mum's not going to have any interest in playing video games. So I think my mum's idea of heaven would be like, I'm there, but she's doing all the stuff she enjoys doing, like ballroom dancing and cats. So I see it as a state of spiritual consciousness that is your idea of heaven. If I don't know if that makes any sense, but I've tried to describe it as best as I can.
Yeah, I get that. A lot of people have said about, like, if there was a traditional heaven and hell, it's they don't particularly get along with their family or some people, especially family. I mean, I didn't get along with my family, so if it's like being surrounded by family and friends, it's like, well, I'm not really too keen on these people. I don't know if they feel the same way about me. Do you really want to be around them? But if they like me for some reason, I'm not sure why, but
yeah.
Yeah, I get what you're talking about. It's kind of your own version of it, and maybe the time works differently up there. So it's like you spend time with people because you've got infinite time.
Yeah.
It passes differently. Okay, so now you've actually volunteered to take part in what this show. It's considered one of the most difficult podcast challenges, apparently. Yeah, especially when it comes to finding guests, which is the whole thing of bearing your life open for the listeners. I say that because I've asked a few people to appear on the show, and they've all chosen a safe route to go or just not responded to my emails after finding out what the show is. So why is it you've stepped up for this?
I guess I was inspired by the episodes that you did with Gadget and Oodles. And yeah, I enjoyed doing it. I enjoyed listening to other people's lives and what life journeys. And I think what a big reason for me why I wanted to come on was because, as we will come on to, even though you've had other guests that have had mental health issues, I don't think I've heard anyone either on your podcast or pretty much anywhere, to be honest, which have had the mental health conditions that I have. So it's like, it's a good opportunity to raise awareness of it and maybe reveal to people certain, just to give them an understanding of how the mind of someone works with what I'll come on to I had.
So you'll be presenting your life as a movie in effort to prove you're worthy of entering the gates of heaven, even though you don't believe in the gates part of it. To make up song for that one. And to help listeners, you'll be presenting it with a popular music soundtrack. So whenever you're ready, we'll get started.
All right. So first choice is Take Me Out by Franz Ferdinand. So up front, I kind of want to apologise because I feel as though my music taste is pretty basic ass. Like, I think the other guests have had a much more, I guess, varied taste in music and no bands that I've never heard of.
I thought mine was a bit pretentious because I kind of went off the rails and did the deep cuts, and it's like, I should have just chose to stay basic.
Yeah, I think there's only maybe one that could be even considered a deep cut in mine. But anyway, yeah, so Take Me Out. This is a song that I associate with the happiest time of my life, because which was around the time of primary school. It's also the first song that I remember where I started to develop like my own taste in music. So I think before this, it was just like real 90s pop music, like the Spice Girls and like Westlife and all that stuff that would get played at like school discos all the time. And weirdly, I have found, like at the time, I absolutely hated all that music. Like all the stuff my sister would listen to, I hated it. Whereas as I've grown older, stuff like the Spice Girls, I'm weirdly nostalgic for and like will happily listen to. This song was when I started to like enjoy rock music, or indie rock music. And so, yeah, it was just the happiest time in my life, in that I enjoyed primary school. Like, I had a good group of friends. I was fortunate enough, like, not to get bullied. It was also, like, I was part of this drama club that, as part of the drama club, it wasn't at the school, it was, like, an external place. We got to do, like, filming as extras, like, with the BBC and ITV. So I had some really good memories of getting up at like 5 a.m. And driving to all these different places across the country. But like getting up at 5 a.m. sounds horrendous, but when you're that age and you're thinking I'm going to be on TV, you don't care and you're just like really excited. And I just remembered the long journeys listening to this song, just properly like enjoying life, not having a care of anything in the world. Yeah, so that was why I chose this song.
Now, were you, I'm guessing with the age, you would have had the CD?
Yeah, definitely the CDs.
Have a Discman when you were travelling?
Yeah, I had a, I think it was like a Bush CD player. And like it'd be a bit annoying sometimes if the car went over a bump and it would get dislodged.
Yeah, so the only thing with CD players, my tapes were slightly better on that one. Did you have like a CD wallet though as well?
Yeah, 100%.
How big was it? 20 discs?
Well, no, as I say, my music taste, like I'm not really, as anyone on the Discord will know, I'm not really a musical person. Like I can easily go like weeks without listening to any music, quite happily. I have to be in a mood for music. And I know that sounds alien to people, but yeah.
That's pretty weird.
Yeah, no, yeah. I don't know. I probably would say I tend to listen to music more when I'm feeling in a happier mood. I don't listen to music to cheer me up.
Okay, so you did say that's when you developed a taste in music. And the next band, that generally doesn't go together with that in the same sentence. You may have to defend the Chili Peppers on it here.
I know, yeah. Yeah, I know you're not a fan.
Yeah, okay, so next song.
Sorry for putting this on your podcast.
Oh, the missus has listened to it on my Deezer account quite a bit recently, so it was like their most played artist last month was the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Right. Yeah.
They turn up in my algorithm quite a bit now.
Yeah. I must admit, I'm not as much a fan of the newer stuff, but I think this era of the Red Hot Chili Peppers is my favourite, and this is probably my favourite song of theirs. Again, it was a similar time. I think it was just after primary school, so it was starting secondary school for the first time, and this was like the start of, well, the first big change that I've had in my life up to that point. It's because I went from being this kid at primary school who was like popular. I wouldn't say like I was like king of the playground or anything like that, but I had a good group of friends. But going to secondary school, it meant that friends that I had in primary school, that a few of them went to a different secondary school, so I got split up with them. And then also, as you go into secondary school, like some of the friends from primary school might be put in a different form, that kind of stuff. So it was kind of like a new start to a certain extent. And to put it frank, I became a bit of a loner. Like, I found it really difficult to make new friends at the start in secondary school. And that was like when I started to lose my confidence a bit. Like, I was like in primary school, I was like quite Mr. Debonair. Like, I had like loads of girlfriends at that age, and I know you can't really class them as serious relationships at that age, but I kind of felt like throughout my whole time at primary school, I was always in some kind of had some kind of girlfriend. But going into secondary school, it was like I just lost all that. Like, I would get laughed at for asking girls out because that really like knocked my confidence. And so yeah, I started becoming a bit of a loner. Only had like one or two friends that I was happy to hang around with. I started to have to grow up a little bit more because some of the kids there were like a bit rougher, and I just wasn't used to being in that environment. Eventually secondary school though did become a bit better. Like, I did eventually make some friends by about year nine and had a good group, and like started to meet my best friend, currently Nathan. And this song was just a favourite of mine around those years. It's not really that the lyrics of the song really mean anything at this point in my life, but yeah, it was just a song that I associate listening to like on my own in the playground and at home in those early years of secondary school.
Did have a nice bass line, I'll admit that.
So this is one where the lyrics like do mean something with this one. So this was the summer of my final year at secondary school, and this is the big, big turning point in my life in terms of like the mental health issues that I'll come on to. So yeah, it was at the end of that year, so I finished my GCSEs and I was just on the local park that we always went on to play football, and basically I was beaten up by this drunk young lad whilst playing football, like totally unprovoked. I was just playing football, I was in net at the time, I distinctly remember, and this lad that was just drunk or on drugs just came over, smacked me in the face for no reason and beat me up. And I think I was trying to play the big, like, I eventually managed to run away, and I think I was trying to be the big man and pretend in the like days, weeks and months afterwards that it didn't affect me, but it did really badly mentally. I like didn't talk to anyone about it because at that age, and I was kind of like under the same. You was thinking that you've got to be tough and you've like don't cry, be a man and take it, don't show your emotions, that kind of thing. So I just like held everything in, which was in hindsight the totally wrong thing to do. Because that, in the time that followed, that was when my mental illness, which was anorexia, began to develop, and a general fear of being around like alcohol. So the lyrics here, the chorus was kind of like, my mind was just messed up at the time. Thinking about that event really like just occupied my thoughts like 80% of the day for weeks afterwards, and months would be just thinking about that attack. That was a big turning point, unfortunately.
The fear of alcohol is, or being around alcohol is kind of, I guess, that ruined your social life, because
especially
this country is like built around that.
Yeah, so I don't know if that's, maybe fear of being around alcohol is putting it too, is making it sound worse than it probably is. So I would say it's not like I can't go in a pub, like I can, but it's like I put a curfew on myself, so I have to be back home like by 9 o'clock, because I don't want to risk being around anyone that's going to be drunk, basically, because it just scares me. And if like I'm walking down the street and I can see someone in the distance that is, you can see it's like stumbling around, I'll cross the road or take a diversion, because I don't want to risk being there, because I'm just scared of what happens. And it's certainly like Christmas parties, stuff like that. I'll go, but I'll leave early. That's the kind of efforts I'll go to prevent myself being in those situations. So I'd say rather than it being a fear of alcohol, it's a fear of being around drunk people, mate, I guess.
That's understandable.
Yeah, but it's a because I know that not all people, when they're drunk, get violent. But it's like, I don't want to take the risk to see whether they're going to be a violent drunk or just a fun drunk.
Yeah. So those environments, if you were into music, it would be a nightmare for like going to gigs and stuff like that, because pretty much everyone is drunk at those places.
Yeah. Although I have been going to gigs more recently, but I've been to a couple. But I'll be out the door straight away as soon as that last song is played. So, yeah, the next one is Misery Business by Paramore. This is another one that I just associate with listening to a lot. So, following the events of that summer, I moved to a new college for my A-levels, literally all of my mates stayed at the sixth form of my previous school, the secondary school. And this was like quite a scary time, because I was literally going to this school knowing literally no one. The reason I did this was because this college had a really good reputation, basically. It was in Nottingham, so it was like an hour's bus journey each way. But I went there basically because of the academic side of things, and I thought it'd do me well in the long run. And in hindsight, it was the wrong decision, because I just found it nigh on impossible to make friends, because I was already like not someone that's going to be drinking and wanting to go to parties and stuff like that, so that made socialising more difficult. So I remember it being it was a really miserable time, because I would just spend a lot of time on my own. I remember on a couple of occasions I would literally be crying in lunchtimes at the toilets. I just felt so bloody miserable. Or I'd just spend lunchtimes in like the library, like just reading books and stuff. So yeah, it was, I made one good friend there called John, who I'm still friends with now. However, I didn't, if I'm honest, even though John was great, the group of friends he was in was like quite large, and I felt guilty for like, I didn't want to demand his time all the time when there was other friends that he would, they wanted to spend time with him and him vice versa. And I didn't really gel with any of the other group of friends he was in. So that was why I spent quite a lot of time on my own. And in the end, at the end of the year, because I realised I had such a miserable time, I went back to my secondary school for the second year of A-levels and the sixth form, being back with my mates. And I thought that would change things in terms of my anorexia, because I should have mentioned that throughout this year at the college, I know this isn't logical, but I thought that people didn't like me because of the way I looked, or they thought I was fat, even though I wasn't fat at all. And I think it was also a thing, I felt that everything else in my life was out of my own control at that point. So I thought the only thing that I did have control over was what I ate and how I exercised. And it just led me down a really deep spiral of anorexia. And then that also has repercussions because of the way it makes you feel in yourself and like makes you grumpier, which then has the knock-on effect of making it even more difficult to communicate with other people in a lot and make friends and stuff like that. I thought that going back to the sixth form would change that and I'd be back with my friends and things would change, but it didn't really at all. I think I still had the bad memories of the attack, and I think I'd had a year of developing all these new anorexic habits of eating hardly anything and doing too much exercise. So I would, I like just carried on with those habits, and anyone telling me, asking what are you doing? I didn't, or anyone that said, like raise the alarm bell saying we think there's something wrong with you, you don't want to believe them, you just like knock it off and say you don't know what you're talking about, and at the time you genuinely do think that, you just ignore them and carry on with what you was doing before. Like, as a way of trying to describe life at that point, it was like every single day I would be either running like a 10k for example, and I would play football in the break times at school, which because I was so worn out, I hated playing football. I used to love playing football, but I hated it because I just didn't have the energy to do it, but I was forcing myself to play football because I wanted to burn off the calories. And then like I'd also be walking to and from school, and then I'd be going to the gym after school. And yeah, it was just, you just felt exhausted all the time. And the idea of eating food was like, well, that's going to make me fat. And I remember like, I'd have like a banana at lunchtime and I wouldn't even eat all of the banana. And I'd like pick at the banana. Like, it sounds ridiculous, but it's the kind of stuff that you do when you're anorexic. You like, you try to just eat as less as you can get away with, basically. But eventually it catches up with you pretty quickly. So yeah, misery business, miserable time. This is probably the deep cut. This is Caravan from the film Whiplash. So some people might like scoff at this. Like, to be honest, I never expected a film to have this effect on me, but it did. But it truly did change the direction of my life. So I remember I'd left the sixth form, and it was at the time where I was like about to go to uni, or it might have been in like my first year at uni. But I went to go and watch this on my own, and it was the first film I'd ever seen in the cinema on my own. And I remember going in hearing it was a film about drums and drumming, so I was thinking, but I like rock music, I might like this film because it's about this drummer. So when the film started and I suddenly realised it was about like drumming as a part of jazz music, I was like, oh, am I going to like this? And then, as anyone that has seen the film will attest, it's a incredible film. And I remember just coming out absolutely blown away by the film, and it just inspired me. I can't describe why it did, because the actual story of it isn't one that's like relates to anorexia or anything like that. I think what I maybe aspire compare it to is that in the film, the main character, he's going to the nth degree to chase his dreams, and he does achieve them to some extent in the end, but it just showed that you can achieve anything through hard work, even if he really does take it to the nth degree. But I just came out really inspired and motivated to make changes in my life that would make me happier. So that was when I started thinking, well, first off, I need to get my anorexia sorted. So I basically, it was summer holidays, and my mum was off work at the time. She was a teacher, assistant teacher. And I basically said to her, I know this is going to be hard, but I'm giving you control of my life through these summer holidays. I want you to give me everything that I'm going to eat and allow me to do only the exercise that you allow me to do. And let's see how it goes. And so I just really knuckled down, and I always think of the film. Have you seen the film Trainspotting?
Yeah.
So do you know the scene where he basically goes cold turkey and locks himself in his room?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of like what I compared it to. I basically did the equivalent of going cold turkey for anorexia, except you are given lots of food and your exercise is very limited. Yeah, I gave my mum that control, and I started to feel happier again, because I started to have more energy, and then that just improved my like mental mood. I started to smile more, and then I started to realise that by making these changes, I start to feel happier, and that the previous habits of the anorexic habits weren't serving me in any way. I started to make these changes and feel happier. And I'd always thought that I wanted to work in the games industry. So then I started doing training. To begin with, I started looking at job descriptions, seeing what kind of skills I'd need to learn. And so I started learning those skills in my spare time. And that ultimately dictated where I work, where I am now, and the career that I've had up to this point, which I'm incredibly grateful for. And even chimes back into that, the very start of the podcast, where I was saying that I feel quite happy in my life. And that's partly because I enjoy my job so much. I think if I was in one job that I really hated, not my first job, that was outside the games industry, so maybe I'd feel differently if I was still there. It all comes back to this film, and that's why it's such an important film for me, and why it's my favourite film of all time, and I don't think that's ever going to change.
So Whiplash is one of my favourite films as well. I was going to say, it asks a question about teaching people, you know, how he pushes him, and it can verge on bullying almost.
Yeah.
But I can see a parallel with you and your mum, where you gave her a control of your life and she's pushing you to do stuff or telling you to do stuff. That's kind of a good thing in certain aspects to a certain level.
Yeah, for sure. Obviously she didn't go to the extent that she wasn't throwing a sandwich in my face J.K. Simmons throws a drum cymbal at Miles Teller. But there were certainly very difficult times in that summer, because I remember there was... she would come into my room with, a snack, and it would cause me to, literally start crying because I didn't want to have it. But I just basically just had to show as much inner strength as I could to get it down me, basically. It was a hard time, but it was definitely worth it in the end. So shall we go on to the...
No, there's 2 minutes of this song left.
Yeah.
I feel bad if I just skip on it, but yeah, we're going to move on. Sorry, Duke.
All right. So number 6 is London Calling by The Clash. So this is because I moved to London. So after finishing university... So I had this one job after university for a couple of years that I didn't like. But I eventually moved to London because this was my first job in the games industry. And it was the first time moving out of my parents, so I was living on my own for the first time in a city that I never thought I would even entertain the thought of living in, because I really like the countryside, I like the outdoors. So it was again another scary time, thinking how am I going to adapt to being on my own for the first time in this city, which is one of the busiest places on earth. So I was scared, but in the end it was definitely the right decision, because I had a really good time in London for the 2 years that I was there. Firstly, I just started to become more independent. As I'm sure you know, there's always stuff that's happening in London. So you're always kept entertained, lots of sites and events that go off there. with it being my first job in the games industry, I was having a great time at work. The office was like absolutely incredible place to work in, and I made a really good friend in London that I still see and still speak to. So it was the first time where I'd probably say I started to feel really happy again, because I felt more in control of my diet and exercise. I'd still say I, and even still to this day, I do still consider myself to be quite restrictive with what I eat compared to the average person, and I'd probably also do more exercise than the average person. So I wouldn't say that I'd say I'm 90% or 95% recovered from anorexia, but you just kind of learn to manage it as best you can, basically. And so with that in mind, I think, being in London, it was when I started to feel genuine happiness again, and knowing that I was being more independent as well was really satisfying. I started to feel as though that things were starting to go in the right direction again.
That's generally the opposite of what most people think coming from the countryside to London. They usually have a miserable time.
Yeah. Well, it's a shame that it's so expensive there, because I think if it was more affordable, I would have been happy to stay there longer. But I always knew that the cost of living there would prevent me from doing that, because I didn't want to be in a situation where I'd be renting all the time for the rest of my life and having to share with people as well. There was also the fact that I wanted to make a slight career change into working in the console and PC side of the games industry rather than mobile, which is where the side of the industry I was working in London. But if someone gave me a well-paid job in London, offered me a well-paid job in London, and they allow me to not rent there, which I think is going to be unlikely, but if that opportunity came up, I wouldn't be averse to going back and living in London at all. All right. So this is Fallout Boy, which is the song Sugar We're Going Down Swinging. It's just Sugar We're Going Down. This is the song that soundtracked my life at this time, which was another move, which is to Birmingham, where I am now. And also, even though it was a song that was released well before I moved to Birmingham, but I came really, really late to Fallout Boy. But I'd probably say they're my favourite band of all time, and this is my favourite song of all time. It just was a soundtrack of this move again. So it was another, I've always moved because of work. Rightly or wrongly, I'd probably say I'm probably a career motivated person. I don't know. I think that's partly because I'm not in a relationship or anything like that, and I haven't been for since I was in primary school, basically. So I've never had a family that I've got to consider, or anyone else for that matter, to consider when making these moves. However, I do feel now that I want to settle down in Birmingham or the Birmingham area, because I'm enjoying my job, and I quite like Birmingham because it's you can get to the countryside quite easily, and I can get back to my family in Derbyshire within half an hour on the train. So, yeah. I think the only thing now that I need for my life, in my life, is to... I do want to settle down and, like, be in a relationship. And, yeah, this is just a song that I really enjoy.
So you've lived in lots of very places, Nottingham, Birmingham, London.
Yeah, Oxford as well.
It's a nice area.
Yeah, it was a shame. That is, so in that first job, I actually did move to Oxford first, for the first gaming industry job. But they closed the Oxford office only after like 3 months of me being in the job. And the option was, you can, because at the time, this was pre-COVID, so working from home wasn't really a thing. The options were, you can either come and commute to the London office 3 times a week from Oxford and work at home for the rest of it, or you can come down and work out of the London office permanently. And I chose the latter, because I didn't fancy the train from Oxford to London 3 days a week. Yeah, so this is Moving to New York by the Wombats. This is another band that I've come to quite late, but another one of my favourite bands. So even though the song is called Moving to New York, no, I'm not moving to New York or planning to. But this song represents hope for my future, in particular, because I see this song as like a song of hope and ambition, like moving to New York in search of, I guess, the bright lights. And that's kind of what I relate to at this current point in my life. Like, I just want to find I want to find love, basically, and contentment. I think that's the only thing that's missing, to be honest. And I think if I was to find love, I think that would even help with my that last 10% of anorexia that I still have, because I think then I'd be with someone that loves me for who I am, and personality rather than, I guess, appearance. Or they'd want to do stuff like go out, like have nice meals, and they wouldn't want to be stressing about food with you. They'd want to go and do things like together. And I think that's what I need. That's what, yeah, I need. And it's hard, because I still have the issues around like socializing, which means I'm pretty much just resorting to like dating apps. So it's hard, but I just hope that I hope I can get there someday.
Oh, that stuff happens. Will happen when you least expect it to happen, man.
I know, yeah, but I know everyone says that, but I feel as though I've been waiting a bloody long time for even the semblance of a passing interest from the opposite sex. Like, I'm lucky if I get a second date. So it feels far away, but. Yeah, I do think about it too much and it upsets me, but I just try not to let it get to me, because I know if I do let it get to me, that it's not serving me in any way, it's just making me sad. So I just try to focus on other things and just keep trying.
Yeah, from what you said, though, you're happy with your life at the moment and happy to live the way you are. So,
yeah.
Keep doing it, man. Okay, we've reached the end now. Anything you want to add? Do you want to sort of repent liking Red Hot Chili Peppers and making me listen to that?
Yeah, sorry. I'm sorry about that. And sorry that there's no deep cuts in there. There's no...
you got some Duke Ellington in there.
Right. Yeah. If you've not... Yeah, well, I'll probably say if you've not watched Whiplash, go and watch Whiplash.
But yeah, I'd say you've had a good showing yourself. You will get into heaven and you can carry on as you are.
Good. Good.
Thank you for coming on today and sharing your story.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's good to talk. And hopefully I've raised awareness of kind of what anorexia is about. I kind of feel as though it's not a mental illness that gets, well, it's actually what I should say. I think anorexia does get spoken about, but I'd say it's more in relation to like girls going through it. Like, I don't think it's as common in men. I don't know if you'd agree with that.
I definitely agree. Whenever you see that, it's always mentioned around models and.
Yeah.
Yeah, you
like influencers. Yeah. Or like, I remember hearing it like in the news recently in like regards to like female like swimmers and like ballet dancers, stuff like that, where they've been really pushed to like be a certain weight, that kind of thing. But yeah, I would say it's not something that you really hear about in men as much. I think you do hear about men being very restrictive with what they eat and like basically like gym bros, like they're trying to like be a cover model type appearance. But I wouldn't say that's anorexia. That I don't know what you'd call that. But it's similar in the sense that you're both obsessive with something. But yeah, I'd say anorexia in men isn't something that is really comes up a lot, but yeah, it's something that I wanted to raise awareness of. And if I probably would say, actually, I know I said I'm not on social media, but technically I'm on Twitter @angry_Kurt, so my account is active. So if there is anyone out there that is listening and wanted to ask about it or talk about anorexia and whether they're suffering with it or not, I'd be 100% happy to talk to them about it.
It's always good. It's good to talk to someone. It's always, as I said with oodles, it's addictions and things like this are a constant battle that you're always going to be fighting against, even though you think you've overcome that last 10%, there'll always be something there.
Yeah.
So the fact that you're coming today and saying like you're happy with your life and enjoying it and you don't want it to end, that's a good sign.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's a very good point.
Okay. So thank you for coming on today.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm going to celebrate, and this is, I'm going to celebrate this podcast appearance by having a dime bar, which is. yeah, that's not something I would have done when I was anorexic, so it's a good good way to celebrate.
And that's it for another Death Is Not The End. Thank you to my guest for sharing his story with us, and thank you for listening. Share, subscribe, rate, review, blah, blah, blah. You know the drill. You can find my stuff over at totalcultzone.com. Social media is a mess at the moment. I'm posting randomly on all of it. So follow me on all of them if you want. You know, I'm not your mum. But, you know, follow me.